I wanted to bring that interest and that research ability and a new way of thinking to a council that I think in some ways is struggling with this issue of having a lot of people who have been invested and involved for a long time, and they haven't figured out yet how to respond to this new wave.
Pod BN.
Elections Edition.
Here we go. From the Play Normal Esports Studio, it's Pod BN Elections Edition. Today we're going to be talking to Joel Studebaker. He is running for Normal Town Council. Talk about economic development, affordable housing, issues with the police department, and another variety of topics. And here is Joel.
3, 2, 1. Here we are back at Pod BN. We are joined today by Normal Town Council candidate Joel Studebaker. Joel, welcome and thanks for being here.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So to start out, just tell us a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you come from? How long you been in town?
Yeah, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, a town called Streamwood, kind of around Schaumburg, which more people tend to know. And my first time coming down here to Normal was actually, I think probably 2005. I came down with my sister who was coming to Illinois State. And I actually said, I hate this place and I will never come here. as most people know, Normal's changed a little bit since then. And I actually ended up coming here for college to study music education. It was the best school to go to at the time. So I came here and fell in love. So I realized that one, Uptown was going through some changes and wasn't ugly anymore, and two, the people here are really great. So I've been here basically since 2008 with a couple of departures to student teach and such.
So I have to ask, 2005, what happened? What didn't you like about Normal?
Well, at the time, people might remember there were a few years where there were not streets in Uptown so much as holes. There was a lot of, you know, refacading, a lot of business activity that's come in since then as well. Uptown's a very different place, and that's what I saw coming here as somebody who was looking at the campus, you know, was the quad and the Uptown. Definitely had visions in my mind of going to a campus like U of I that's grand and huge, the kind of thing that you see in college movies, and didn't appreciate the benefits of a place like ISU or a town like Normal.
Music education is a tough major. I had some music ed friends. Do they still have like zero credit hour classes for performance attendance and stuff like that?
Yes, there is still a zero credit. Well, at least when I was there, it's been a little bit now.
Yeah.
Zero credit hour classes. Your 1 hour credit hour classes that actually require about 12 hours of class time and work every week. So. It's a time commitment. It was
something to be proud of that you got through it.
Yes, I'm very proud of the education that I got at Illinois State, what I learned and what I accomplished.
Yeah. Did you work as a music teacher for a while?
I did. I taught music in my life. I've taught from kindergarten through high school. And unfortunately, you know, now we're in a teacher shortage. When I was a new teacher, there was actually too many teachers on the market, especially in music, particularly band teachers, which is what I wanted to do. And as a matter of circumstance, I ended up, after a brief stint of teaching back at ISU, actually researching science technology education, which was a significant departure, but something I really enjoyed doing.
What's your primary instrument?
Clarinet.
Nice. So what was the timeline then? You were a teacher for a while. Were you a teacher here? You going to Normal?
No, I did some student teaching up in the suburbs and then ended up in a town some people might know just from passing by it on Route 39, Tonica, and Dimmock. Mm-hmm. So I taught in two very small schools, each about 250 students. And taught everything. So general music, you know, kindergartners sing songs, and eighth graders learning to play the euphonium, kind of the whole gambit.
Nice.
Well, is that difficult?
Yes.
To have that, is it like each hour of every day you're teaching a different age group? Or
yes.
Yeah, that would be.
Oh, man. So when did you start getting more involved in the community?
Definitely after I moved back. So, you know, I left, and even while I was in Tonic, I was fortunate to be close by. And 50-minute drive down 39, and I could be back in Normal. I was lucky to have friends who had a spare room and a spare bed, so I could come down here on weekends. And so when I came back, and I honestly forget the question. You said, what brought me back?
I just wondered when you came. So you came back here and then just wondered what you, like, what got you started getting more involved in the community and what you were doing with that.
So it was a couple of years. When I first moved back, honestly, work was crazy. I was working on a National Science Foundation study that kept me pretty busy. And I still knew a lot of people from college who were still in town. And then there came this point where all the people that I'd known had left, and I was still here. And I felt kind of lost for a little bit. And it was honestly following the 2016 presidential election that I kind of became part of this broad group of people in town who all met each other because we were like, wait, what's going on? And we realized that our politics were getting away from us. Our democracy was getting away from us because we weren't talking to one another. We weren't building relationships. And so I showed up at the Democratic caucus for the township elections in Normal in 2016 in December.
Your calendar must have been bare.
Well, and previously that was something that, you know, was usually decided by four people in a room.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, there were closer to 100 people here.
That was quite a cycle, actually.
It was huge. And so I saw all these people and was like, wait, what's going on? And people were constantly having events, meeting at the bistro and planning socials and just getting to know each other and building this community around shared values.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to be involved with Sarah Grammer's campaign at the time. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'd say 80% of the people that I know in this community now, I met because they got involved. We saw over 100 volunteers, people who wanted to go out and talk to other voters about what was happening. And I met so many amazing people through that experience. And they keep introducing me to new people who are pretty amazing. So that was kind of the beginning of me finding this new community outside of what had previously been largely people I knew through being in the Big Red Marching Machine. And
So you went from, you know, the presidential election of probably the initial spark of maybe this political thing that happened. But then you went from that federal presidential level to probably one of the more local levels you can get to in a township race. was there something that drew you into the local part of that? That
definitely. I'm what some people would call a municipalist.
Yeah.
I really believe there's very little we can do about our federal government, right? I can vote for a senator and a congressperson every 2 to 4 years, depending on which cycle we're on. And outside of that, I can call them and hope that they listen to me, which they probably won't, because what's happening federally is so partisan that they're just making whatever call the party dictates most of the time. And even at the state level, I've got such little say, right? I can vote for a state rep and a state senator. Locally, in April, there's going to be like 25 people that are going to get elected.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge, and I have a say in so much of it. And I'm really starting to interpret democracy as something that I'm involved in daily and something that I get to witness and control. And so I really think the local politics draws me in because it's not just like a vote every 2 years and then being angry.
Yeah.
Right? You get to be involved and you get to be present in it. And be part of a community of people who are doing the same. So I'm really excited to see so many people that are investing themselves in the work of this local politics.
So we talked to Stan Nord earlier, but I want to remind people that in Normal, you have 3 seats open. And how many people are running for those 3 seats?
eight of us.
Eight people running for three seasons.
Yes.
So that's, I mean, I think right away that's going to make a very exciting cycle, you know, an election cycle.
That's one word for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to have so many different ideas, I think, come to the table. And what's, for usually, like, let's take a presidential, because that's what most people are familiar with. There's people that run for president that know they're not going to win, but they want to get an idea across, mm-hmm. right? And I think maybe for the first time we might see some of that. Not that not everybody wants to win on this local level, but there might be an idea that surfaces during this election that, and that person who brought up that idea may not win, but that could help shape what the town's going to look like.
And I think we saw that to some extent. I know both of you are from Bloomington.
Yeah.
We saw that in 2017 with the mayoral election, mm-hmm. where Mark Tiratilli ran and came within seven, and then after a recount, 11 votes of becoming our mayor. And really what he did was he talked to a ton of people, and he found people who shared his grievances about where the town was going. So I think we've already seen that, this very focused, issue-based campaign that came out and said, I think we should be going in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And you can agree or disagree with him on the issues, and, you know, Mark and I have talked and acknowledged we disagree on a lot of it. We agree on some of it. And I think people are really ready to have those conversations. For a long time, I think we've taken local politics for granted. Mm-hmm. I think in the 90s and 2000s, especially, we got so caught up in the culture wars, so caught up in presidential politics and how that was a proxy for, were you pro or anti-gay marriage? Are you pro or anti-abortion? And now people are like, oh, I should understand a TIF district. What is that?
Right.
And so it's kind of a new frontier for local politics.
It must be weird. I got involved a similar time as you did in 2016. I always considered myself a political person, but basically that meant I listened to, you know, some podcasts and some weekly review federal TV shows, and I could talk about whatever issues were on the, you know, headlines. And got disgusted with that activity and the feeling of disempowerment with that. Sounds like what you're saying. I describe it as being more like a reality TV show than I would like it to be. Mm-hmm. Like the presidential election feels like American Idol, where technically I can call in and vote, but, you know, I have my preferences, but then someone else chooses another one, and I have about as much influence on it as that. So then I got involved locally as well at that time. I wonder, for people who have been involved for longer than that, it must have been a weird experience to all of a sudden have people like you and me poking around, asking questions, running for office, getting on boards and commissions. And Justin, you've been involved prior to that. Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't involved that much before you guys, maybe a couple years. But yeah, I mean, to answer your question, it was weird because it was a wave of people, you know, where before if we had a council seat open or even a board or commission seat open, it was like pulling teeth trying to get someone to either run or volunteer their time to do it. And then, you know, one day after an election in November, there was this army of people that showed up and said, I want to do something. And overwhelming would be the only word that comes to my mind. I mean, it was just, now we have a whole new problem of so many people that want to get, a good problem, but, you know, a problem that, nonetheless, of so many people that want to get involved. And how do we maximize our, you know, how do we use these people in a way that they utilizes their skills and can bring up the community. So yeah, it was an odd situation, but a good one.
Cool. So why did you think that running for office was that thing for you, Joel? You're already on the library board, right?
Yeah, I serve on the Normal Public Library Board. I was appointed to that in 2017. So it's been nearly 2 years now. And when I got to the library board, honestly, I had very different expectations of what it would be than what it turned out to be. And part of that is just the timeline that I thought I would be largely involved in helping to figure out how we get a new library and what that library is going to look like. At the time, a lot of legwork had already been done. And so I thought, hey, I'm going to be part of the kind of end of this process. And, you know, maybe in 3-4 years, we'll be breaking ground. What I found was that we kept having these items put on our agenda for the library board that had more to do with, you know, are we going to give First Sight and Young America a tax break? Because turns out, library board, it's a taxing body, one of many that people take for granted. There were a lot of tough decisions around kind of these relational issues with organizations and businesses in town, a lot of tax policy, and those issues caught me off guard. I didn't expect to be dealing with those as a library board trustee. And I was very invested in them. I saw these issues and had very strong opinions, and that drove me to do a lot of research so that I could back up what I thought. And I learned a lot. And that knowledge and that interest, I don't think it serves the library board as well as it would serve on the town council. So I really made the decision that, you know, instead of running for the library board, I wanted to bring that interest and that research ability and a new way of thinking to a council that I think in some ways is struggling with this issue of having a lot of people who have been invested and involved for a long time, and they haven't figured out yet how to respond to this new wave. A lot of the things that Normal talks about right now, the mural, the buildings that are potentially going to be demolished, the new buildings that are being built, so much of it focuses around Uptown right now. And those are decisions that were largely made in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
People like me weren't paying attention back then, and now all of a sudden we're angry about decisions that were made in 2003. But I think it's difficult to say, well, we have to just continue forward with the path that was charted. So how do we move forward and chart a new path that accommodates all these people who all of a sudden started paying attention and are like, wait, no, I didn't agree to this. Mm-hmm. This isn't the town that I wanted. And work together to chart a new vision.
Very good. Well, we're coming close to our halfway point. So what we usually like to do at this time is kind of a rapid fire. I'm going to say a word. It doesn't have to be a one-word answer from you, Joel, but maybe just, you know, keep it under five. First thing that comes to your mind.
Okay.
You've already touched on some of these, so but we'll start from the beginning. Here we go. How about Uptown?
Place I drink coffee.
Illinois State University.
Marching band homework and home.
Nonpartisan elections.
Are they, though?
TIF district.
Sometimes good, sometimes super destructive.
Connect Transit.
How I get around.
Portillo's.
Delicious hot dogs, questionable business practices.
Shops at College Hills.
I go to Target sometimes.
And last one is urban sprawl.
Makes me uncomfortable.
Okay. That's good. We'll take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back. Take this time to say thanks to our sponsors, Play Normal Esports, where they have over 30 gaming PCs, 10 Xbox Ones, 10 PS4s, 2 Nintendo Switches, and if you have a child that wants to have a party, they have 2 party rooms. They offer lock-ins, food, and drink. You can find out more at their website, PlayNormalEsports.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thanks to Play Normal Esports for being our sponsor at PodBeatIn. We're back with Joel Studebaker. Joel, you have a platform we've read online before. A few things, key points to stand out. I'll say the points, and then I'll let Tyson ask some questions. Maybe you can expand on them. But one is to improve the economic development, fair housing for everybody, improving the quality of life for hourly or part-time employees, and then handling some of the what you consider police issues in Normal. Where do you want to start with that, Tyson?
Well, I was really interested to talk a little bit more about Uptown. You said that was one of the things that initially pushed you away from coming here, and then now something that drew you in. So there's been a lot of stuff that's changed since you went to school, had your initial experiences. What things do you see as being positive changes, and what things do you wish would have gone a different way?
Yeah, I think when you look at the beginning of the Uptown redevelopment plan, I see a lot of positive there. And this is where, you know, we talk a lot about TIF districts, and I think the Uptown TIF has been a great model for both the good and the bad. In those first years, a lot of the money that we were putting in was going into rehabbing our sewers and our water lines, making sure our utilities were ready for the businesses who were setting up shop there. We were helping to make sure that Uptown looked good. putting in the circle, helping to refacade buildings, particularly at the West End, where we have things like Coffee Hound and Jimmy John's. I think the look of those areas is really iconic, and we were supporting what were small and local businesses by making sure the town was doing its part. Right? We're responsible for sewers and water. And the circle, I think, radically changed things. I honestly can't even conceptualize what Uptown looks like before the circle. It's so foreign to me. But that brought this sense of place. And now it's a place people want to congregate, where we can host events, and it doesn't even make sense, like, gather in the middle of the traffic circle that's, what, maybe like 50 feet wide for a grassy patch, and yet everybody wants to be there. There's no place better on a beautiful day to go and take a, you know, iced coffee from the Coffee Hound and just enjoy an hour. But then on the back end, there's a lot of decisions I regret on behalf of the town. And the one that stands out to me as an early decision was the CVS building, where, you know, that was developed by JSM, which I believe is out of Champaign, put in what were at the time fairly luxury apartments for students, 1 and 2 bedrooms. It doesn't hold a candle to what we see now with the Lodge, but...
yeah, the term luxury student apartment has changed drastically over the last, like, 8 years.
It has evolved. It has really evolved. But these were nice apartments that were, at the time, pretty expensive, $650, $750 per bedroom, maybe even a little bit more than that. And on the bottom, we have CVS and some offices for ISU. And I have a couple of issues with it. One is that it could have provided decent and affordable housing for people who need it instead of just luxury apartments for students. We have our transit hub in Uptown, and when we talk about building affordable housing, we're always talking about building it, like, out in the fields where there's one bus stop and it takes half an hour to get back to, you know, like, Veterans or Main Street or any of the places where people might work or shop. And I would really like to see that being put into a place like Uptown, where we have a transit hub and we have jobs and we have businesses where people can go and get what they need. And the other thing is just that it's ugly. And I know some people might disagree, but we've got these huge block-wide developments that, you know, CVS is a great example because now it is going on, what, 8 years, 10 years, something like that?
I guess close to 10, I would guess.
Yeah, and it doesn't really stand up. We talk a lot about the historical architecture and features in Uptown, and it draws people there, definitely. Right now we're having a big fight about whether or not we should tear down 3 buildings that are pretty insignificant, except for the fact that they contribute character. Right? They don't have famous architects that built them. They don't have some outstanding architectural feature that we don't see anywhere else in the state. They just provide this sense of being in a place that you want to be. And the CVS building, for me, doesn't create that. And I haven't heard that it does that for other people. So I have this concern that we're building these enormous things that disconnect us from where we are and alienate us. And there's some research that suggests these gigantic developments do just that, that when you walk, you know, half a block and there's only one door because there's not storefronts, that it creates a very different atmosphere than when you walk down what's on the other side of the street, where you have a theater and a coffee house and a sandwich shop, and I can get a falafel. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, is kind of this turning point. And the other standouts from that kind of turn and shift into large development in Uptown, it includes the Marriott, the Hyatt, and we can talk about what those contribute and don't contribute. There's certainly pros and cons. But the standout to me at the other end is One Uptown on the circle. Most people identify this with a vacant space, you know, on the ground floor. This is a significant and large storefront that was initially supposed to be a fine dining establishment. I think rumor on the street was a Ruth's Chris. And from what I've heard, and I can't verify this, but it would cost about $2 million for a restaurant to come in and actually build that space out to make it usable. that's a huge upfront investment that a local business isn't going to be able to afford. I'd love to see a new Epiphany Farms restaurant in that space, but...
Or even if they could afford it, the risk rewards may not be there, right?
Exactly. Like
when you can build a couple blocks away and...
Exactly, and save a lot of money. And then the monthly rent, we're talking huge numbers. $15,000 and up are the estimates that I've heard. So we're setting ourselves up to require outside developers, outside investors, national chains, or at least large regional chains, where the profits aren't going to be sticking around normal. They're going to be going somewhere else. And I think that's really problematic. And so we experience that today in the form of empty space. But even if we fill it, is it going to be the most sustainable kind of development that we can have? And I don't think so.
I think I've heard this comparison where people really like some of the things you touched on earlier, like the circle and the newer streets and curbs. You know, it looks clean and nice when you like compare it to downtown Bloomington that's all older and historic and that kind of thing. But they all their mind changes once you start looking. I've heard the comparison of now we're just building the shops at College Hills and Uptown.
Yeah.
You know, because now we're tearing down older buildings to build these new buildings. And to your point that you just made, we have empty spots at the shops at College Hills in these new buildings because of the fact that the rent is so high on these new buildings. The spaces are so large. We can't even attract the franchises or the, you know, big corporate businesses to come in there, let alone the small business that is local.
And exactly.
With some of the historical, but I mean, my business is located in downtown Bloomington, and one of many reasons, but one of those reasons is because it is affordable. It's a small historic space that, I mean, for my square footage, it would cost me three times as much as if I went on the east side of town. Yeah. So,
and I'm sure another pro for you in selecting that space is what, three doors down from the Coffee Hound?
Yeah.
Which is a great location to be in when that's probably a lot of the clientele that you're looking at, people that you're hoping associate. Oh, I need insurance. I need a policy. Okay, well, I've seen Justin's name down the street from my favorite place to go on Saturday mornings every day for the past year.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's great. Well, if we look at the Trail East development, which is, you know, in planning stages right now, I don't see street frontage for the businesses, for the restaurants they say are going to be in this kind of food hall. I see a big kind of block-long sets of windows and wall from the street, which means that a business, a restaurant, anything that goes in there, it's not going to benefit from the kind of thing that you get with your space in downtown Bloomington. And that's some of the difference that we get between the new and old styles.
I think one of the things that epitomizes that something is going wrong downtown is the fact that uptown, something is off, is the fact that a Starbucks went in there. It's like, what are two of the places that are most frequented and anchored in Uptown? It's the Coffee House and the Coffee Hound. There's already two coffee shops there, locally owned, thriving businesses, and then you put a Starbucks right in between them. It doesn't make sense to me. So do I think there should be some law that there can't be a Starbucks there? No, but it sort of, to me, is it's a real visible conflict between this corporate presence and the local business and how they're not working well together, right?
Exactly. And I think you can look at, you know, today I don't think that's negatively impacted Coffee Hound or Coffee House. The number of times that I've gone into one or the other and turned out and walked down the street to go to the other because it was too busy and I couldn't get a table.
Yeah, right? I think they're doing okay.
Yeah, I think that they're doing okay. My worry is that the developments we're building, which are owned by, you know, Tartan Realty in Chicago, this new development to be owned by Bush out in Iowa, that they want to make as much money as they can off these properties, right? And that's not just the incentives that we're giving them of returning their property taxes to them. That's also rent. And so if they have the option of charging a rent that makes a profit and is reasonable but is affordable to a local business, or Panera Noodles Potbelly comes along and says, hey, we'll give you 20% more every month for that same space. Which way is it going to go? And I think that's what you see in Urbana, for example, near campus on Green Street. You see that it's been overtaken by a lot of really kind of national chains. And that's just because as rent goes up, you can have a customer base at coffee house, but are you going to be able to afford the upfront costs? Are you going to be able to afford that overhead? And for a new business, you certainly won't be able to. And so I think we're locking ourselves into a really dangerous pattern.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And to do all of that, I think what stands out most about One Uptown is we had to guarantee a 10-year lease for the second floor that the town of Normal is on the hook for. We spent over $1 million building that space out, and we're spending, I think it's something like $350,000 a year on leasing that space out. And we gave that land to the developer for free. So when I think about what we're giving up and what we're getting in return, there's a lot of questions of, in the long term, does this add up to the benefit of the people who live here?
So outside of Uptown, what are some other issues that's going on in Normal that you want to address throughout the campaign?
Well, I think when we talk about economic development, we do have a lot of questions. What's happening between Bloomington and Normal? And that's a place we need to focus. There seems to be a lack of trust between the two towns. MetroZone being just one example where, you know, we can't cooperate and work together. It should be a win for both of our communities if Dick's Sporting Goods comes to our community. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we are fighting over who can incentivize better, who can provide a more alluring economic zone where you can, you know, get more of your property taxes rebated back to you or get some kind of deal, that's alarming to me, right? I don't want Kroger wanting to literally move three blocks across the street so that they can get a Bloomington tax rate instead of a Normal tax rate. And so I'd like to see the towns start to cooperate more, figure out solutions to these problems. And that's going to be hard and difficult. And in the short term, on every issue, it's going to feel like somebody's losing. Mm-hmm. But in the long term, I think it's in all of our benefit.
What are some ideas you have on how that communication and collaboration can occur?
You know, to be honest, when you ask a question like that, I think of, you know, like marriage counseling, that if only it were so simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That a big part of it is establishing trust. When I look at MetroZone, I understand why Bloomington backed out of that. It was a bad deal for Bloomington, right? And had things been different, and I don't know that the interpersonal relationships, I don't know what happened to lead to that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if council members were having phone calls across boundaries or if the mayors got into a tiff. Sorry, a argument. But there needs to be a sense of trust between those. And that would definitely be a goal of mine to establish that. Mm-hmm. I wish that at the time we would have been able to look at that, and instead of being territorial, saying, you know, you agreed to this, we need to maintain this, we could have come to another agreement that was fair to everybody involved. Because at the time it wasn't. And I don't know if Normal tried to cooperate or not. So I can't say that was a failure. But I certainly hope that we did. And that's certainly the kind of governance that I would look to, that we say, do you know what, this isn't fair to you. Let's figure out an arrangement that works for everybody instead of encouraging you to go off and do your own thing because we're stubborn and want the deal that we signed on to originally.
I've heard from other both people currently sitting on both councils and candidates about this issue, collaboration mm-hmm. between the two communities. And as you've said, it's easier said than done. I don't understand, like, it doesn't seem like it should be that difficult. Even to someone, you know, like, what's wrong with once a month two people from each community getting together and going to talk to constituents together, you know, and just building that kind of organic relationship, forced organic relationship, if that even makes any sense. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's it seems like they're talking through media at each other a lot, you know, throwing shade sometimes here and there. But what, you know, why can't both, you know, the mayor of Bloomington and the mayor of Normal come together and talk, sit down at Coffee Hound 1 month and Coffee House the next month in Normal, or, you know, whatever. But what's wrong with that? I mean, is that on a micro level where it has to begin?
I mean, I think it does. And you said something in there. Why can't representatives from both towns get together and go talk to constituents together? Which leads me to another question. Why can't representatives from both towns talk to constituents? Mm-hmm. Which is something that generally I think doesn't happen enough. Mm-hmm. I think in Bloomington it happens more because of the ward system, because you can actually understand your constituents in a limited group, right. and form what's more of a coalition. And that's led to what I think a lot of people in Normal see as chaos in Bloomington and a lot of disagreements, because there's more direct representation. And so I think partially because of the ward system and the at-large system creating very different governing bodies and strategies, there's different mindsets about how you work together and how you govern in the two towns, and that creates friction. But I think it does start with having those conversations, even if they're difficult and seem like they're not fruitful, right? Well, the first one's not going to be fruitful, probably.
Right.
It's going to be the relationship that you build over years that actually creates a environment in which people can collaborate and work together.
So do you see any people, either people who are running or on council, Bloomington or Normal, do you have people that you know where you already can see, like, yeah, I think I could work well with this person?
I think that's a loaded question, because... if I don't get to choose who else gets elected, right? The people choose that. I need to make my best effort to work well with everybody. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean agree with everybody. That doesn't even mean compromise with everybody, because some people's ideas I can't compromise with. What it means is that I have to try to work with people, sit through what might be frustrating, difficult, infuriating conversations. It is... not about deciding that you can work well with these specific people, right? It's about making your best effort to work well with everybody. That said, there are definitely people that I would be excited to work with, people who I think share a lot of my values. I think Jen Carrillo in Bloomington brings a lot to the table. She talks about a lot of issues that other people are afraid to bring up and gets a lot of flack for it. But when we look at some of the serious issues we face, like the Stevenson's report on significant racial problems in our policing, where we're seeing a really probably not intentional but certainly discriminatory outcome of how our police operate and who they're pulling over and who they're ticketing. And she'll talk about that, and that's important that people are bringing those issues up. I'm really look forward to working with Pat Turner. I hope that she does well in this election. She brings so much to the table and so much knowledge of communities that are often ignored when we look at our municipal politics. The work that she's done for the past few decades to make sure that people have food and clothing and basic dignity is a very different lens and perspective on life than the business backgrounds that most of our representatives come from. Mm-hmm. So I think there are people I'd be excited to work with, yeah. But I would look forward to doing my best with everyone.
That's fair. That's fair. That's a good answer.
So go back to one of the things you brought up was the police issues in Normal.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that for us?
Yeah. Well, this is something that I have a lot more to learn about. In both Bloomington and Normal, the Stevenson Center has reported that there's a disproportionate number of people of color being targeted by police. Now, when I say targeted, I'm not saying that that's intentional. I'm not trying to call every police officer a racist, somebody who is intentionally trying to pull over, you know, people of color and not white people.
Yeah.
But what it shows is that the way we are policing is creating a system where people of color are more likely to feel the outcome of that than white people in our community, and that's not acceptable. And I think what's most troubling to me is it's largely been an issue in Bloomington. We had the creation of a civilian review board that, to this point, I think hasn't done...
They just got their first case.
They got their first case.
They just got their first case.
Okay. So I'd love to see them doing more and actually digging into the policy and digging into how we can improve things before it gets escalated to that point where we need a review. But I'd also love to see that same thing in Normal, because the Stevenson report showed that we actually have a bigger problem in Normal. The difference is that a lot of the people who end up being pulled over in Normal, having interactions with police in Normal, don't necessarily live here. And so it feels like this external thing. And a lot of, you know, the people who are involved in the kind of activist world are, they live in Bloomington, so that's where they focus. But it's a problem, and we need to talk about it. Another issue in Normal is, you know, we have, in Unified Schools, we have police liaison officers.
Yeah, resource officers.
Yeah, right? Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Sorry, police liaison was the term when I was a kid. And so the resource officers, I've heard great stories from people in Bloomington about how helpful they are. And it can be a contentious issue because a lot of people see the presence of police in schools as inherently negative. But I've talked to parents, you know, who say, my kid feels safe because that resource officer is there, and my kid is building functional relationships and participating in the community in a way that I don't think they would without the resource officer. But Bloomington does something great. They actually train their police officers, give them the training that they need to be effective in that role, and make sure that the resource officers are actually present in the schools pretty regularly. And in Normal, that's not the case.
Oh,
they're
really
in the schools less frequently, divided between schools, and don't receive the same training that, that Bloomington police officers receive.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I want to touch on that because I didn't know that. When I was in school, it went from us not having a resource officer to having one while I was in school, and this was a long time ago, unfortunately, but so my memory might be wrong, but I remember two resource officers, and I remember a very distinct difference between the two. They actually had an office in the school that was theirs, so if you needed to talk to the resource officer, that's where you would go. But I remember one being like, maybe overly so, but like trying to be your buddy, right? Like you know, hey, what's up? Trying to just have conversations with you, not very intimidating. The other one made me feel like a cop from a TV show, you know, like made himself look like a cop from a TV show where he was kind of intimidating and I wouldn't want to go talk to him. I see that as kind of what you're describing in Normal, where they're popping in for a couple hours a day, maybe then going to a different school. Is that what you're touching on, or would you like to see more of the prior one that I talked about, or?
You know, I can't speak to that. I haven't actually witnessed,
sure,
you know, how those fair police officers interact. You know, and it's ultimately not fair to compare an area where you have police officers that are receiving specialized, specific training to help them do this job to a place where they are not receiving that training.
Yeah.
So these might be great people who are fully competent and capable of doing this job who just need additional resources. And so I think it's really important that we dig into how are we investing in our police department?
Mm-hmm.
How are we making sure that they are effectively trained, that they're doing the best possible job, and that we are not taking for granted anything just because we've had a relatively low crime rate historically, right? And especially when we look at the violence that's been happening in Bloomington and in Normal, you know, right now is the time to look at those best practices. And to make sure that we are investing appropriately.
Yeah, I mean, you can never take a good crime rate for granted. I mean, I'm in Bloomington. I know we went several years with a very low crime rate, and then, you know, this last year, 18 months has been, especially when you talk about violent crime with some of those things. So
another difference between Bloomington and Normal is the Welcoming City Ordinance. So Normal does have a Welcoming City Ordinance. The current status in Bloomington, I believe at this time, unless something's happened I haven't heard, it's on the police chief's desk to provide some more information about what their policy is in dealing with deportation and contacting ICE. So, like, is it kind of, from your perspective, is Normal's got it, we're good, or would you like to see more done on that front, too?
I don't think we have a Welcoming Cities Ordinance. We have something that's called a Welcoming Cities Ordinance, and that's different. And essentially what happened is that Bloomington was kind of antagonistic through the whole process. People went to Bloomington and said, we want this ordinance because we want to protect our neighbors. And Bloomington fought it, right? There was a lot of personality. There were clashes. And meanwhile, Normal did what I think Normal is very good at, and they set up meetings, and people talked, and they ended up with the document. The problem is that the document's not good. It basically enshrines what was already current and standard practice and Normal as law, which essentially creates some red tape, some bureaucracy, requires that the police track any kind of interaction with ICE. Now, that doesn't mean that we are consistently and perpetually contacting ICE, but it means that it's a possibility, and it means that there doesn't have to be any kind of warning. In my mind, I worry about ICE a lot, and I worry about my neighbors who might be impacted by ICE because I don't think they behave responsibly. So I would like us to refuse to collaborate with ICE and refuse any communication with them. And a lot of communities around this country have done that. A lot of them, unfortunately, have done that only after they realized the problem and somebody that was crucial to their community got taken away and deported wrongfully. And so I think it's really important we have a real Welcoming Cities ordinance that just says we're not going to do it. We're not going to talk to ICE. We're not going to help them. Yeah. We're going to protect our neighbors. And the current ordinance doesn't do that.
And I believe the one that was the different versions that were being considered in Bloomington would have that same limitation, as far as my understanding of them, too.
Yeah. The ordinance proposed by the Keeping Families Together coalition in Bloomington, it was a good ordinance. And unfortunately, I think what is under consideration is watered down just like Normal's.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great example of how sometimes we can craft legislation that feels really good, but at the end of the day doesn't actually protect the people it's supposed to. And as a, you know, natural-born white citizen, like, okay, the de facto outcome of our Welcoming Cities ordinance, it's not going to impact me personally. Right? And so it's very easy for me to say, we did something and I feel good about that. We can't do that anymore. We have to actually look at what the real outcome is and we need to demand better.
So in your mind, how do you start prioritizing some of these things that are important to you? I mean, if you win the election on April 2nd, you know, you're going to have a lot of issues already that day one that you're going to have to start educating yourself and getting up to speed on and learning. But as far as the issues that are important to you and the reasons why you're running, how do you prioritize those and how will you do that after you win?
Well, it's difficult because I don't know what the composition of the council is going to be. And it's pretty clear that on some of these issues, in particular economic development and the way we use TIF districts and incentivize businesses, they've been pretty uniform. And I've been pretty uniformly opposed to those decisions. So if, for example, it was, you know, me and two incumbents that were elected on April 2nd, it's very possible that I don't get much accomplished at all, right?
Sure.
And I'm prepared for the fact that it might be me against what is otherwise the current council for 4 years, or at least for 2 years until there's another election. And that's terrifying. I hope that at least by raising new concerns and bringing up new ideas, I can start to at least shift that path.
Yeah.
Right? But there's also the potential that some of those members change their mind. There's the potential that we end up with three new voices on the council in April, and that could bring stark and sudden change. And so I think there are places where we'll be able to agree. For example, Normal passed a recycling ordinance.
Yes.
Earlier, oh my gosh, it's 2019. They passed it last year. and I would have been in support. There's some tweaks I would have liked. I would have loved for it to depend on our municipal recycling program instead of private contractors. I would have liked it to be on a 6-month timeline instead of a 12-month timeline. But I would have voted for what,
sure,
you know, was the final ordinance, because it was definitely an improvement. And so there's a lot of good happening, right? We focus on all of the bad. There's places where I agree with the council. It's just not these big, sexy topics. It's not five-story buildings going up in Uptown. It's not, you know, big incentive packages for companies. It's not affordable housing.
Right.
And those are the places where I don't expect immediate results, but I hope the community starts to take notice of these issues and talk about them, and over the long term we can create change.
Is there anything else you want people to know? Plus, also make sure you direct us to where we can learn more about you. Do you have a website or Facebook? Or?
Yeah, of course. So you can learn more at joelfornormal.com. Sign up for the newsletter. There's also a Facebook, Joel Studebaker for Normal Council. You can get all that from the website. So joelfornormal.com is really what you need to know.
Nice video, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's very well
thank
done.
You. Yeah. I am lucky to have very impressive friends with really great skills they're willing to donate. So
that always helps make me look campaign. Good. Friends with skills is always important during a campaign. All right, Joel. Well, thank you for joining us. We're trying to get every Town of Normal and City of Bloomington Council candidate on the podcast, give them the opportunity to just do a long form of who they are. So we appreciate you giving up a little bit of time on Sunday when we're recording this to do just that. So thanks very much.
Thanks for coming, and good luck on April 2nd.
Thank you.
Number four in the books for candidates down.
Yeah, Joel was a good guest, I think. He had a wide range of topics he wanted to talk about, and, you know, from his experience on the Normal Library Board to being a student at ISU, I think he brought a lot to the table.
I continue to find it interesting about how there are some differences between these people, but there are also a lot of similarities in what they're focusing on. If you compare him to Stan, for example, there's a lot of overlap there.
There is, yeah. I'm actually very excited to try to get an incumbent on the podcast, you know, RC or Kathleen, to see if there is any differences there, or if we can actually find the common ground between those as well.
Yeah, it gives me hope that there can be some good progress on these things. And so we have most of the candidates booked. We'll be continuing to release these. We've been very happy that they're willing to spend their time and come on. If you're someone who hasn't gotten in touch with us yet and you're listening to this, then go ahead and send us a message. We'll get you scheduled in.
Yeah, and don't forget to visit our sponsors when you have an opportunity to. We record these at Play Normal Esports in their soundproof room, and they're a great sponsor, so we really appreciate it. Ask them about their VIP packages, and if you ever have those gadgets that you break, smartphones, laptops, tablets, don't forget Normal Gadgets.
I think there's been a birthday party in here every weekend that we've been in here.
Yeah.
It's doing very well. It's a cool place to be.
It is a cool place to be. Whether you have kids that like games or you like games yourself, come check it out. I think you'll have fun.
Yeah. Are we done?
I think we're done. Let's wrap it up. We are getting close to the end of time, or the end of our time, I should say.
had me concerned there for a second.
Right, sorry.
This is one of those places you can edit out.
Sure.
You can keep that in if you want. Might be funny for the audience.
I'll put that as an outtake. We can get an outtake at the end.